Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hard count, flag flies, free play, end zone, Turpin, touchdown Cowboys.
When I see a quarterback utilize cadence the way that he does, and I know that's a little thing, but it's reflective of he's got total control of the field. He's looking to manipulate the defense, he's looking to control them. Hopefully we'll have a loud crowd here on Sunday that combats his ability to use that cadence to our disadvantage. But when I see that on tape, I know like this is a guy that's seeing the field really well right now, and he's trying to move defenders around. And I think that's when you have an experienced player like that, that's a dangerous thing.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score.
That is Ben Johnson, Bears coach, who desperately wants to coach Dak Prescott because he's had enough of his time apparently coaching Caleb Williams. He'd rather coach a quarterback who can play the quarterback position as opposed to a guy on the playground running around. He does scripted plays really well. The rest of the game, Caleb's found a new way to suck this year. He used to suck in the first quarter and got better. And now he's really good on the scripted plays, touchdowns on each of the first two drives. They never scored a touchdown on any opening drive last year, and then he sucks the rest of the game. Congratulations. Welcome to your new Bears. Highlight before that was a Prescott touchdown against the Gents, right? Didn't they beat the Gents?
That is correct. Yep. Yeah. It was courtesy of Fox.
Courtesy of Fox. Thank you, Sean Sears. And can we have an update on our web poll? If you want to join us, go to the Score's Twitter page.
At 670 The Score on Twitter and X. Here right now, we are at 130 votes. We are 90.8% dumb players over coaches. So that's 9.2%.
So they're the reason coaches. The dumb players are reason. Bleeping dumb players.
Bleeping dumb players, yes.
Are the reason the Bears suck, not bleeping dumb coaching. Okay. All right. Well, the public is speaking. Welcome in, welcome back. Saturday Suckage. So, of course, we're talking about the Bears. We're talking about the Bears and Cowboys and the two suckiest defenses out there. There are only two defenses that have given up 500 yards in the game, and they're going to be on the field against each other tomorrow. Let's go. Two once proud franchises that used to have a doomsday defense and a 46 defense, and now they're the worst you can imagine. Let's go down to Dallas. Joining me on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline is RJ Choppy of 105.3, host of the morning show down there, CircaLasVegas.com. RJ, thanks for taking time out to talk about the Cowboys and Bears with me today. The vibe here is like you can't lose to a team that bad. What's the vibe like in Dallas?
You know, during that Giant game, if you follow the game on social media during the game, it was sky is falling. The next day it was a lot of the same. It's a win. People felt better week one losing to the Eagles than they felt week two beating the Giants. Like the way they played, you know what I mean? It's just like, yeah. You played well in that week one game, but you lost. Okay, fine. They're better. You play the Giants, and it was like, all right, was Russell Wilson just in the zone, like just absolutely unconscious, or is that a sign of things to come? And look, it's a sign. We know what it is. This Cowboys defense is not very good. Their secondary is as trash as it gets. They are leaning into run stoppage. Like that's they got Clowney, they get Kenny Clark. I mean, they are leaning into stopping the run, and now they can't stop the pass.
Well, that good news is that after the first drive, the Bears can't pass. They do a very bad job of that, and they can't run the ball to start with, which I'm sure even Matt Eberflus has figured out. And the Bears don't present that kind of problem where you really need run stopping because they don't have a load back. So if you were the Bears, how would you attack the Cowboys defense as you've seen it play?
Roma Dunze. That's how I would attack the Cowboys defense.
Okay.
We expect him to have a massive game, just a huge game, because the Cowboys can't stop the pass. And, you know, their pass rush is okay. It's not elite. They could use this guy named Micah. They could definitely use him this year, but their pass defense just isn't anything special. And you get a good player like, you know, Malik Nabers last week or Roma Dunze this week. I mean, they're gonna especially with Ben Johnson designing the plays. I mean, I take the over. I don't care what it could be a downpour. Take the over. Fog bowl. Take the over.
What does Matt Eberflus know about Caleb Williams other than he couldn't coach him to be any good?
Man, I don't know what Matt Eberflus knows, period.
Excellent. Then you might as well have been a Bears fan last year.
You know, he was here for a while under Rob Ryan, and then I think under Marinelli, and he's running that, you know, cover two, cover three. It's just, you know, the players should get it right. That cover two is like one of the most basic defensive concepts there is. It's not like he's reinventing the wheel, and they're just missing assignments. Like, I don't know if that's Eberflus. I don't know if that's his players don't fit with that system. But I mean, the reviews are not high right now on Matt Eberflus and the defense.
My guest is RJ Choppy, co-host of the morning show on 105.3 in Dallas, part of the Odyssey family. There is interest in Eberflus coming back, and there's great fear that Dallas defense might actually figure something out, and he could walk out of Soldier Field with a win at the guy who didn't know how to manage timeouts and then couldn't justify it, and in Thanksgiving became the first Bears head coach to be fired in mid-season. Is there any sense that it means more? He's trying to downplay this. I haven't really thought about the game. We just look, go forward. We learn something. Is there any sense this means more? Have players indicated anything, even if he hasn't?
You know, in terms of the game anymore? No, we haven't heard much about it. You know, we don't talk to him on our show. We get Schottenheimer, we get Jerry Jones on our show. I know they're all like they're pulling for him big time, but we haven't heard much from the players or from the team other than that saying like, hey, this is a win one for the Gipper kind of thing. It's, you know, I'm sure it's no different than Ben going back to Detroit last week, right? I mean, even though that didn't end poorly. You want to beat the team that you were at. I don't think there's any question.
So you mentioned you had Schottenheimer on the show along with Jerry Jones at different times. So when you get Brian, give me your early thoughts on Schottenheimer, head coach, play caller, face of the organization, as opposed to Jerry Jones, the plastic face of the organization. But Brian Schottenheimer spends a lot of time being out front. How has he handled that and responsibility and what goes along with being a Dallas Cowboys coach?
Well, look, we have no idea what kind of coach Shotty's going to be. From a interview standpoint, from a culture standpoint, the guy's great. Like, he's a good dude. He seems awesome. Like, we have a ton of fun with him every time he's on the air with us. He's on with us every Friday. He's fantastic. I don't know if that's going to translate to wins. You know, that was not an inspiring performance they had against the Giants. You know, moving forward as the year goes on, like, what happens after the first three-game losing streak? If they have one, if they lose this week to Chicago on the road, then you come home to Green Bay, you're probably losing that game, so you're 1-3. I mean, that's not the way to start. And, you know, McCarthy, I liked Mike. I was a big fan of Mike. I was not in the majority. The majority opinion was he had to go. But I thought Mike was just fine. I don't think Mike was the problem. But certainly, like, there are some things that Shotty's learning on the job. Like, we talk we went back to training camp. You know, the Cowboys had a lot of guys. I think they had like something like 12 guys missing practice one day. They never had more than three in 5 years under Mike missing practice at any point. Like, he did a good job of keeping the guys healthy. But that's a veteran coach, right? He knows what he's doing. He knows, like, get it day to day, how to work it through. And, you know, Shoddy's learned on the job. But, you know, early reviews and concerns are, I mean, it's pretty good. Not great, but it's pretty decent.
My guest is RJ Choppy, 105.3 in Dallas, part of the Odyssey family. He's co-host of the morning show. And when you talk about Jerry Jones and you mention they could use a guy named Micah, so this is a game featuring a team that could both teams could use Micah Parsons. Has anger subsided? Has it turned into something else? And the justice, sometimes when you get lame justification for a move that appears to be that stupid, that it just doesn't leave. It just foments and become worse. So how is that played out?
You know, there's a lot. I mean, it's kind of, we're still keeping an eye on Micah. You know, we still keep tabs on him, but it's subsided, to be honest with you. I mean, the fans, I don't know if the Cowboys have done a good PR job on, you know, kind of placing blame and, you know, going into details on the contract, but you know, there was a lot of fans that were upset they traded him, and then about a week after, it's like, okay, we got a good player, Kenny Clark back, and a couple of first round picks, and we're going to make do. Because there was a lot of people that thought Micah was like, he didn't come up with big sacks in big moments, you know, one sack at four playoff games, yada yada yada. So there's that element to it, but at the end of the day, you know, it's about a player, and that player could be used right now.
So, speaking of players, maybe the best player on the field tomorrow is CeeDee Lamb. And how would you defend him? What has worked in the past? What would you do? What could the Bears do?
You've got to get in his head. He can lose himself a little bit. If you're able to stop him early on in a game and you get to the second quarter and he's got one target, You know, maybe you get midway through the second quarter and he's not really doing anything. He can get in his own head. There's not really a physical on the field way to stop him. He's always open. I mean, two guys on him, three guys on him, the guy can still make a catch. He does have that weakness where you can kind of get in his head. We've seen it a couple of times where he's upset. He's walking down the sideline by himself. Sulking, you know, he's not really getting in with Dak. It's happened like one time, but that's about the only way. Other than that, I mean, this guy is a legit frontline wide receiver. You know, he's not Jefferson, he's not Chase, but he's right there as the next best guy.
Well, getting into his head, as you described, it seems like it would be self-inflicted on the Dallas play calling. I mean, you get him involved, and suddenly he's much more interested. He's not spending the first quarter and a half going, hey, I'm over here, right? It seems self-inflicted.
There is some of that, you know, but like, you know, obviously every play has its own receiver and you know, where the read and progression is supposed to go. And if the defense is able to, you know, leave other things open and him not get the ball, you know, obviously it plays into it if the Cowboys are losing. If the Cowboys are winning and he's not getting the ball, he's not going to be upset. But if they're losing, if they're down 10-7 in the third quarter and he's barely touched the ball, then you might start to see that get into his own head. That's it. Otherwise, he didn't have a weakness.
RJ Choppy is my guest, 105.3 in Dallas, co-host of the morning show. We're talking Bears-Cowboys here. Before I let you go, we're wondering whatever happened to Montez Sweat, the guy who was brought here and paid a lot of money to be a multiplier. And this week they're talking about, we'd like him to win his one-on-one blocks. I mean, that shouldn't even be a question. He should be insulted that he's facing single blocking. So what was Montez Sweat like against Dallas when he was a Commander?
I mean, he did some decent things. Like, I don't remember him being a black hole. On that defense, he was a absolute, and I mean an absolute, like, terror at the end of college, right? His last year at Mississippi State, he was a terror. And we were like, okay, you know, they got him late in the first round, really good player. But, you know, I don't remember him being a problem. I don't remember him being, like, a guy who can't stop anybody. I remember him being a pretty decent player. Is he not? Has he not been?
We're waiting for him to get a sack. The pass rush sucks, and the pass rush starts with him and this whole blah, blah, blah about a Tez effect. The Tez effect is he sucks, and he's not getting to the quarterback, and he's got to be the first one there. That would set a really good example of what the guy's supposed to be. If you're a multiplier, start with that, make everybody else better. If they're single blocking him, then what's the point? That's what the question is up here with him.
Man, that's interesting. I was looking his grade is, I mean, he's a 74 PFF grade overall. That's not terrible, but if he's not getting the quarterback, he's not putting any pressure on him. I haven't paid attention to him this year. That's not why you got him.
Okay, you're right. He's not. That's why both teams could use Micah Parsons, because he can actually do that. RJ, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. Thank you for spending time today. All right. RJ Choppy of 105.3 in Dallas, co-host of the morning show. Take a break when we come back. I'm going to do the cultural zeitgeist, and this is really in the zeitgeist of the score. This week marked the 35th anniversary of the release of one of the all-time great movies, and it has such a presence on the score. And now I'm going to tell you to go home and get your shine box. I'm Steve Rosenblum with Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score.
Good thing you played the liner, Sean, because there'll be Wake and Bakers or Wake and Bake Club members will think, oh my God, this is the afternoon show. Tandy did something. Who got fired? Who got traded? That's the coda from Layla. No, it's not Tandy doing that. It's not Tandy saying goodbye to somebody. It's Stevie Suckage. And I'm saying hello to the glorious history of Goodfellas. 35 years ago this week, never miss a chance to do stuff with this movie, and such a part of the score fabric as well. You can tell by the music and so many other things that have happened on this station. It's based on the book Wise Guy, which is the story of Henry Hill, the late Henry Hill. The book was written by Nicholas Pileggi. When Scorsese called him about buying the film rights, he told the author, I've been waiting for this book my entire life. Pileggi responded, I've been waiting for this phone call my entire life. This is according to At the Right Movies, all the right movies. In casting the lead of Henry Hill, you know who's considered? Tom Cruise? Sean Penn? Alec Baldwin? Studio was looking for names bigger than Val Kilmer was so keen to play Henry Hill that he made a short audition tape for Scorsese. Young actor desperate to land the part was a guy named Ray Liotta. He was nominated for Something Wild. He also sent an audition tape to Scorsese. Scorsese didn't watch it. But here's what happened. This is the way Hollywood luck goes. Liotta bumps into Scorsese at the 1988 Venice Film Festival. And Scorsese was receiving death threats from death threats from The Last Temptation of Christ. He's surrounded by bodyguards. Leota said the guards look, quote, look like they wanted to kick the bleep out of me. Scorsese said he was so impressed with how cool Leota was in that situation. With Henry's role, Henry Hill often playing Peacemaker in Goodfellas, that when he got back safely home, Scorsese watched Leota's audition tape. He loved it and decided he'd found his Henry Hill.
And that's that.
Yeah, and that's that. Right. In the film, you know, Henry Hill is an addict to a lot of things, actually, but he's a coke addict. So Leota, he can't use coke, right? He's cocaine. It's illegal. Leota practiced snorting lines of crushed vitamin B tablets. Scorsese was so obsessed with the tiniest detail, he said. It had to be white. It had to look like it. And also, he tied my tie every day as he wanted it to be right. Scorsese is tying Henry Hill's tie. Now, this is a really wonder the way entertainment turns back on itself and childhood stuff. I mean, Scorsese saw, he read Wise Guy, and he saw his childhood there. He knew these guys. Wise guys. He knew the good fellas in the neighborhood. One of the key supporting roles is the psychotic Tommy DeVito. Now, we always hear these stories, like I just told you earlier about who was talked about for Henry Hill. Do you know who was talked about for Tommy DeVito?
No.
John Malkovich? You could see that.
Yeah, that would be it.
And William Peterson. Chicago's very own.
Yeah.
William Peterson would have been so different from the Joe Pesci. It was William Peterson would give a darkly scary, it would be ominous the way he can look. I love him. He can be ominous. Scorsese, though, for all of the talk about John Malkovich and William Peterson, he had originally earmarked Joe Pesci as the mob boss, Paulie. Pesci wanted to play Tommy. But Tommy was a younger man, and Pesci would have to wear a lot of makeup. Scorsese said, let me see him in his prosthetics. So they gave him the makeup, and he go, okay, this is the guy. Now, the real Henry Hill, I mean, you remember everything that Joe Pesci did, that Tommy DeVito did. Real Henry Hill said Pesci's portrayal of Tommy was 95% accurate. And Pesci won an Oscar, Best Supporting Actor. And he had what was one of the shortest speeches in Oscar history. He's waving a statue, and all he said was, it's my privilege, thank you. And he walked off. The voluble roles that Joe Pesci has played, he's so the opposite in real life. That's it. Thank you.
And that's that.
Yeah. So there's another major gang member, right? And it's with Scorsese's buddy, Robert De Niro. Jimmy the Gent Conway. You know who's supposed to get that first? This is an easy call. Come on, John. Who's supposed to get that role first? Al Pacino. But he turned it down.
Really?
He wanted to appear in Dick Tracy. That's when Scorsese turned to Robert De Niro. One of the first people considered to play Henry's long-suffering wife, Karen Hill, was, here we go, Madonna. Okay. Scorsese went to see her in Speed the Plow on Broadway. And another big name in the running was Ellen Barkin. A few years earlier, a young actress named Lorraine Bracco had auditioned for Scorsese when he was casting for After Hours. Bracco wasn't right for that part, but Scorsese never forgot her. And he cast her as Karen. Karen. I mean, which would, you know, decades later, doesn't that carry on so much
Karen,
more?
Karen, Karen, Karen.
She's like, Karen, right. So like Robert De Niro was famous for method acting, Lorraine Bracco as well. She demanded real jewelry in Karen's outfit. Now, you remember some of the stuff she was wearing, right?
She looked like a mob's wife.
She sparkled, yeah. She told Scorsese reportedly, if you want me to portray a princess, treat me like one. Wow. That's
awesome.
That's a Karen, right? That's a Karen. The real, you know, a lot of names were changed for the book, right? Jimmy the Gent Conway, that wasn't his real name. It was Jimmy Burke. Whether they were facing lawsuits or the threat of lawsuits. So Tommy DeVito's name, the real surname was DeSimone. Joe Pesci suggested he become Tommy DeVito. You know why? You know where he pulled that name out of, Sean?
Danny DeVito?
No. He pulled it from the guitarist in the Four Seasons.
Oh.
Pesci had been friends with the three lovers at the time, and he was a friend of Bob Gaudio, and it was Joe Pesci. Yes, that Joe Pesci who introduced Bob Gaudio to Frankie Valli, Tommy DeVito, and Nick Massey. And that became the Four Seasons. Joe Pesci did that. And one of the more famous, what do you think the most famous scene in the movie is, Sean?
The helicopter scene at the end.
Oh, really?
Maybe. That's my favorite scene from it.
All right.
But most famous is probably the opening, right? Ever since I was a kid, I was going to be a gangster. Right?
Okay. All right. You can be wrong as many times as you want.
I love being wrong. This is the show for it.
So as a young man, Joe Pesci worked as a waiter.
Oh,
and one time he told a mobster, you're a funny guy. And he found himself in the middle of a terrifying prank by this mobster who asked him, funny how? Pesci told this story to Scorsese, who loved it. And Scorsese said, do this when we film the bamboo lounge scene. We're not going to tell Ray you're doing this. What you see from Ray Liotta in the film and what you see from Joe Pesci is all a surprise to Ray Liotta. Ray Liotta did not know what was coming, but he went with it because Joe Pesci once had that prank pulled on him. Funny how. Now, maybe I'm a little drunk here. Oh, it was an all-time great scene. It wasn't in the movie. It wasn't in the book and got in the movie because Joe Pesci had been a waiter and said and had that experience with a mobster.
Funny how.
So you're listening to Layla right now. Scorsese didn't hire a composer for the film. You know, a lot of these films have had mega composers, spectacular music, right? He scored the film with pop music like this. And in choosing the songs, he made two rules. The lyrics had to describe the scene. And the song had to have been released before the time the scene was set. Layla, you're listening to the coda from Layla, was released in 1970. The film heist in the movie came in 1978. So there you go. It's perfect. So you recall Henry meeting Jimmy, right? He's handing out $20 bills as tips. During the filming, they had fake money. But De Niro, being the method actor that he is, wanted it to be real. Wow, that's a lot of 20s. One of the props team gave $5,000 of his own money to the cause. And after each take, no one could leave until all the money was counted. Not hiding those in any of this, any of the cigar cartons or cigarette cartons. One of the campier things there was the Maurice Wiggs, right? The guy who had the information for the heist. He wanted his money, and Maurice Wiggs, the cartoon, not cartoon, the commercials for that were one of the campiest things. It was inspired by real commercials. Scorsese saw an ad for a window fitting company, and he spoke to the owner, Stephen Paca, who told him he made the ad himself. No kidding. It looked like you did those kind of ads. Scorsese commissioned Paca to write, direct, and edit the Maurice Wiggs ad. There you go. That's how you get it professionally done. That's why it looks that way. Billy Bat's death sequence. See, you could have said that, too. That was go home and get your shine box, Sean. You said nothing of interest, Sean.
See, and I even thought I was going to get it wrong again. I thought you were going to mention the garlic.
Wherever I go, Frank Vincent said, who played the legendary Billy Bats, anytime I go anywhere, they tell me to go home and get my shine box. Perfect. This is perfect, too. As extras, like in the when we first see all the both the Bamboo Lounge scene when Funny Hal, right? And then the scene where Henry Hill is talking about the cast of players who were in there. Yeah, I talked to that guy about that thing for you, right? And that all those guys. Well, the first time we enter the Bamboo, all the times we enter the Bamboo Lounge, those are real gangsters. Scorsese had real mobsters in the movie. Funny House scene, they meet the gangsters. Producer Irwin Winkler said the mobsters gave Warner Brothers fake Social Security numbers. And no one's actually sure how they got paid. Once a wise guy, always a wise guy. 35 years ago this week, Goodfellas came out. Stories are endless. It's just wonderful. Thank you for that part of the cultural zeitgeist I wanted to share with you. Take a break. We'll get back to the sad reality of the Bears playing tomorrow. Talk with Mark Potash on Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
He's gone, and we couldn't do nothing about it.
And Jimmy Two Times, who got that nickname because he said everything twice, like,
gotta get a paper, gotta get a paper.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Barry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Barry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Similar sentiment to what I just said about Noah. His approach is really good. He's willing to do whatever it takes right now. And I think there's a number of guys like that where we're just looking for a win. And it doesn't matter the production, what the stat sheet says. He wants to go out, and if it's in the run game, if it's in, he'll help out in pass pro. He did that a little bit last week. But physical nature, he wants to help set the tone for what we want to be about on offense, and he wants to do it the right
way.
It's
Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score.
That's Ben Johnson, bleeping Ben Johnson. By the way, where's our web poll now, Sean? Is it still at The Score account? Did somebody steal it from us?
No, it's still there. It's still there.
It's 670thescore.com on Twitter?
It is still at 670thescore.com on Twitter. Here right now we are at nearly 200 votes. 90.6% are saying the players, 9.4% are the coaches.
The question is, who blames the Bears suck because bleeping dumb players or bleeping dumb coaches?
Coaching is what it
should
say.
So, there you go. A majority of fans are blaming the players. It's interesting. I wasn't sure it would go that way, but it seems to be a landslide. Let me ask my next guest if he's surprised by that. Mark Potash, markpotash.net, is where you find his musings and other things we'll discuss in a moment. Our web poll, who do you blame for the Bears sucking, Mark? An overwhelming number of respondents to the Score web poll say players. You surprised by that or not?
No, not at all. I mean, Ben Johnson is kind of the fair-haired coach, and people for a while I've been looking for a reason to blame Ryan Poles for this whole situation. And this just feeds right into that. So, his draft picks have not worked out after it's only two games, of course, but still, I mean, not much at all. And in general, they have just not played well. So two games into a regime where you've got a coach who everybody just loves, he's not going to get the blame. I think we've even seen before, even when from the Nagy era, when his first year was pretty good. The doubt about the coach comes later. I think it's always the GM who gets the blame. And this time, like I said, people are, there's a lot of people who blame Ryan Poles for this than the coaches. And so this is just one avenue to do that.
Mark Potash is my guest. MarkPotash.net is where you can find his stuff. And you would unearth this stat that probably should have put a lot of blood in Bears fans' urines. The Bears haven't won a game in which they've scored 23 or more points since 2021 when Nick Foles rallied them against the Seahawks in Seattle. Since then, they're 0-25. I remember when 23 used to be a really popular number in Chicago. It used to be popular. Yeah. So it's a statement in a lot of ways. So expand on that, what that stat tells you.
Well, the context of that, and it was the games in which they've allowed 23 or more. In other words, the Bears have rarely been able to win shootouts, which is kind of what they might have to do on Sunday. The context of that is that in that same span that the Bears are 0-25, the Lions were 13-13 with Ben Johnson as their offensive coordinator. And that sounds like kind of a mediocre number, 13, but that's like the third best in the league in that span. That's to win games when your defense gives up 23 or your team gives up 20 is not easy to do. Mahomes is great at it, but Ben Johnson is also very good at it. Now, most of that success came in the last 2 years, not in the first year. And that's kind of the theme of everything we talk about with the Bears, is that whole idea of patience, and that you're asking Bears fans to be patient after all these times where patience hasn't paid off. But you have to. I think it's legit with this coach. So going back to the original thing, yeah, it's the fact that the Bears are going to have to win shootouts, and Ben Johnson after that first year has been pretty good at winning shootouts. So it's one of those things where you just got to say, yeah, it'll be there, but it'll have to be there. I think it'll have to be there on Sunday, based on the way the defense has been playing and with all the injuries they have.
I would look at that. Well, you're in a game where each team is facing a defense, the only other defense that has given up 500 yards. There's only two, the Cowboys and the Bears, and they're playing each other. And I look at Caleb Williams, who has found a new way to suck this year. He sucks later instead of earlier, whereas he couldn't do anything on the first drives in his rookie year. And now all they do is score touchdowns on the opening drive. And then after that, it's awful. So if not now, when? When would he do it against a – when would he show he's that guy? When would the Bears offense show – it's growing into it if you can't do it against Dallas's defense.
I love the situation they're in, the scenario they're in, where Caleb Williams has to prove himself against a Matt Eberflus defense. You could not script it any better. You really could. It's such a Bears thing. This game is a lot bigger. I mean, this is one game, but this game is a lot bigger than I thought it would be. I'll say that because it wasn't surprising that the Bears are 0-2, but the way they've been 0-2 by, dredging up the ghosts of every failed Bears coach since Lovey was fired, is just uncanny. And so here we are, and they booed the Bears in the first game of the season and with a coach that everybody loves, just think, you know, they get the fans have a short fuse. Just think what it's going to be like if they don't come through in this game. There's going to be a lot of pressure on them, and I'm not saying it'll go sideways if they don't win, because I do think Ben Johnson will figure out eventually. But there's a lot of pressure on a lot of people for the Bears to come through, and I think it's just it's going to be exciting to watch and see how they handle that pressure against Matt Eberflus, who people never really got a chance to say goodbye to. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle that situation as well.
Mark Potash is my guest. You can read him at markpotash.net, Mark Potash sports writer, all kinds of good stuff there. I want to get your thoughts on what Ben Johnson did this week, what he said, when we're not practicing at a championship level. Says the guy who's organizing the practices, who's in charge. He looked like he had them practicing at a championship level or championship contender level. He yanked the first string. He was in charge of it, and now he acts like he's not the guy in charge of it. And he didn't immediately say, and I need to also say, I'm not coaching at a championship contender level. Because last year, when Eberflus did the, I confess, they did it, and pay no attention to the second last play in Washington. I'm not taking any blame for that. I did the right thing, and that carried on. His players, he lost them then when he refused to take any blame. And I don't know how tomorrow goes, but did it echo with you that here's a coach saying, I confess they're not practicing right, that it just doesn't – it's another bad thing coming out of a Bears coach's mouth?
Well, yeah, I mean, on the face of it, the first question you ask is, whose fault is that? That would be the follow-up that I would try to interject if I was there. I think it goes back to the first thing we talked about, and that being that the players, because they had similar issues with practicing and not being held accountable and players getting lax or whatever when Eberflus was here. It wasn't a big deal, but it was still part of it. And now you've got a similar thing. I guess my take on it is I think Ben Johnson's learning a lot about these players. And as I wrote in a story I did on my website, I think he's learning a lot about the GM who acquired those players. And we're going to see how quickly he learns. And this is twice now. He's kind of called out players. And I think he's just coming to the realization of what the roster, what kind of players he actually has to deal with. And, he made a lot of changes after that first year. Could be the same thing, but my take on it is that, again, it goes back to, is it the coach or the players? Normally you say, yeah, it's the coach's responsibility to get the players in shape, but this group hasn't really responded to coaching very well. They totally tanked it, not tanked, but they totally imploded after that Hail Mary play against the Commanders. They've shown everything. They're good. Hey, they're good guys. They're good players. But they've shown no heart, for lack of a better word. And I think Ben Johnson is kind of learning a lot about that he needs to get more out of these guys, that or something out of them that he maybe can't get. So that again, it goes back to, is it the players or the coach? I think you're looking at a situation where he's finding out. He's coming to the realization that that the players are part of the problem, the roster, I guess.
What do you expect tomorrow? Do you have a prediction?
Yeah, I did. Here's how silly this whole thing is. I predicted the Bears to do something that they have not that they have done once in the last 12 seasons, and that's win a game in which they give up 27 points. I've got them winning 31-27 because I still think that at some point when Ben Johnson, when this offense gets going, it's good. I think he, again, higher floor. He's just when even though he's bad at a higher level. I think his offense will, when it gets good, will be good. And it could happen. It probably won't happen Sunday, but if it does, if it's going to happen, it could happen against a defense that's given up 30 points a game. So, I guess what I'm saying is I have not very much confidence in my pick, but yeah, I did pick the Bears to win 31-27. And like I said, I'm going to do something that they've never done or rarely done. So that just shows you where we're all at. And I'm in the same boat as everybody. I'm not the only guy who's sounding silly or looking stupid, because we're all kind of flummoxed by this whole thing. Here we go again, situation in the third week of a new coaching regime.
All righty then. Well, let's get the good ship Stupid is ready to set sail for Bears Cowboys tomorrow. Mark, thanks for joining me today. I appreciate you taking time.
Steve, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
All right. Mark Potash, markpotash.net. Go there, read stuff. It's entertaining. It's smart. It's insightful. Before we get to Megan Montemurro of the Tribune and talk some Cubs, top of the hour, I want to let you know this. Listen up, people. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas is the place to be for Chicago football fans September 26th through the 29th. Spiegel and Holmes will be broadcasting live that Friday and Saturday from Stadium Swim, then staying for the Monday reaction show after the Chicago-Las Vegas game. So join the Score next weekend at Circa in Las Vegas, Chicago's football headquarters. Log on to CircaLasVegas.com to reserve your stay today. We're going to change subjects, talk some Cubs. What's your Cubs pitching rotation? We'll ask Megan Montemurro of the Tribune what hers is. Next on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.